On Point, hosted by Peter Van Aartrijk. Conversations with interesting and informative experts on technology, branding, culture, social media marketing, and other great topics.
Hello again, everybody. I'm Peter Van Aartrijk, your host for On Point, brought to you by our good friends at Wells Media, which includes Carrier Management, Insurance Journal, and other fine publications. Our guest today is Elad Sor, who's the co-founder and CEO of Plank, and Plank is providing artificial intelligence-related risk research and data solutions for the commercial insurance space, commercial carriers. Elad, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Peter. Pleasure being here.
Yes, glad we were able to do this, and I certainly have a lot to talk about. And as you know, Plank and InsurTech space and what's going on with artificial intelligence, et cetera. But I always like to start with the person. Insurance is an interesting space, and so is InsurTech. So tell us a little bit about yourself, Elad, and your career and what led you to where you're at today.
No, absolutely. So, wow, it's been a while. My career started with computer science. My background is an academical background of computer science. Went to university during high school and graduated high school with my BSc in computer science. Then I got drafted to a very special unit in the intelligence forces in Israel, doing very cool stuff around AI and how machine learning, as we called it back then, can really help with homeland security and domain and projects. About 7 years later, I left to open my first startup. During the time, I've studied for two different masters in computer science, so I kind of doubled down on AI and machine learning. And in that startup, I founded, we've done lots of data crawling and machine learning from open web, and it was a very cool insight generation for prospecting and sales. And eventually, we got acquired by Salesforce, and it turned to be Salesforce Einstein. So I'm kind of one of the fathers of Salesforce Einstein. So anyone who's using that platform, if you like it, that's me. If you hate it, forget what I just said. Yeah, it was a great period of time for young entrepreneurs sitting together in the garage, building machine learning models to produce data from the open web. And after leading the Einstein platform at Salesforce for 3 years, I've decided together with my co-founder, Amir, to open Plank. And my other background is with insurance. I grew up into an insurance family, as my father is a veteran agent in Israel. He led the biggest agency in Israel, its life and annuity arm. And then he moved to CEO, the second biggest one, and they became number one in Israel. So I kind of grew up into the distribution realm of insurance. And I always wanted to bridge that gap between my academical background, the AI, that frantically changing top-notch algorithms that can pretty much solve almost anything, as we all can see these days, with that very slow-moving, very mature yet not that much evolved to the 21st century domain, which is insurance. And that's how we came to open Plank, to bridge that gap. And that's where I am today.
So you didn't have, or maybe you did, I had Fortran and COBOL in college.
Wow.
And it was extremely, for me, being, you know, the right brain guy that I am, it was really, really challenging. And we had those punch cards back in the day where you had to feed them into a giant machine, you know. So the process made it so that you really had to dedicate yourself to technology to really get through it, because it was like, you know, create these punch cards, you know, maybe you know what I'm talking about, but you give them to the guy. Yep. There was always one guy, the nerdiest one of all in the university, who was running this giant computer, and you weren't allowed in the room. You just had to put him under the door for him or something. And then he'd run the cards. You'd get your big printout. And if you had it right, the printout was really short. If you had it wrong, it was like 5 inches deep of paper because it was running a continuous loop and not getting to the solution the teacher wanted. So anyway, I had a stint. I tried it. I admire it. I admire people with tech backgrounds, but that was painful. For me,
believe it or not, I actually have programmed in COBOL. I have programmed embedded machines, you know, General Electric's controllers and logic gates. So very, very low level background all the way to very advanced algorithms in very, very high level development, programming code. And I do have all of that span. Worked on mainframes as well. And one of our customers, as you know from the insurance industry, just celebrated their 40th 4.0 anniversary of their policy admin system in COBOL, written in COBOL, deployed on a mainframe, and they invited me to that celebration. It was me and the CEO of Microsoft in that region, and both of us, the two external participants, guests to that event, and they asked me to speak. And they're all celebrating. And I told them, guys, just to be to set expectations, right? I'm not on your side. This is not a reason to celebrate.
Yeah.
Right? Just let me tell you how we've integrated our platform into your model. We've OCR'd the terminal from one of the consoles that you gave to one of the terminals you gave to a user and automated the keyboard to type back the results into the mainframe. This is how advanced you are in terms of adopting new technology. We had to OCR your screen in order to avoid an API integration into the because of that old technology. So I definitely recommend any insurer out there to adopt open platforms, to go and get to the 21st century, even if you don't use Plank, right? Just make sure you have a high quality data lake, good policy admin system, advanced one, use even web interfaces.
Yeah.
Stop using old GUIs.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I think they're, if there's any left, they're being forced to. Everybody built it themselves in the 60s and 70s and 80s, and I think they're stuck with a lot of what they have. But I think they're forced to just purely, and it's so expensive and it's so time consuming for a lot of them. But we can get more into that. You know, it's interesting how you got into InsurTech with your family connection. I wonder if you had picked another slow moving industry or it would have been insurance all along. But it's always interesting to me how people wind up in the space. A lot of it is family connection, and a lot of it is pure happenstance. But that's what makes it so that's what makes the world interesting, when you find these pockets. Insurance is like one of the last one left, you know, to. That's why so much private equity money coming in, because they realize, wow, this is a huge industry, just the numbers alone and the importance in the economy. And so it's an attractive place to go. But let me ask you, what is Plank all about? Who is your customer primarily, and what are you doing for them?
All right. So these days we have two types of customers. We have the underwriters and the underwriting department, and the distribution, and the agents and the brokers. Let's start with the underwriters. As when we've opened the company, we've put 100% of our focus on the underwriting department, as we knew that we can generate data out of thin air, out of the web. We've built our own crawlers. We've digested web data, images, videos, audio files, maps, governmental databases, social reviews, website text, rating sites, anything out there that speaks about a business, has a business in it, shows the business. We're able to collect, process, and generate using AI, the underwriting insights. And insurance is all about data to assess risks. And the biggest department that can benefit from our capabilities is the underwriting department, with obviously improving the operational process, lowering the expense ratios, but mostly lowering the loss ratios, with very, very high accuracy of the data. So that's what we've targeted at the beginning of the company. And we've built a data platform, an AI-based data platform for commercial insurance, only commercial insurance, that was very simple. We got the name and an address of a business as an input, and we've sent them the underwriting insights as an output through an API. That's how we've started. And unlike, it sounds like a very typical data vendor-ish, right? We get name and address, it's selection from a database of a record, and we return back that record. But it doesn't work that way. We told them, guys, it's the other way around. Don't ask us what is our data dictionary. We do have a data dictionary. We came with hundreds of insights already baked into the platform. But we're asking you guys, what is your data dictionary? As with our ability to generate insights, we can generate the insights that you want. And they saw that suddenly they could add a lot of hypotheses that they had, lots of attempts that they had, and automate a lot of them. You know, we had a carrier that saw one of their competitors, another carrier in the US, that was asking for bars, whether the bar is the latest open bar on the street. And it makes sense, right? A lot of drunk people go to the latest open bar on the street, don't keep on partying. And they wanted to embrace that insight, to bring that insight, and didn't want to change their existing supplementals, their existing forms. So with us, we just returned that. They told us we need that insight. We've implemented that insight. Now we have another AI model that's predicting that insight. And they got it back through the API and integrated it into their process. And that's why we've built about 770 insights before we went to the next level, before we went to the next layer of logic that we've added on top of the basic data platform. So this is how we've started, by serving the underwriters with automatic insights that can be used to automate the process. Nowadays, we have several layers on top of that. We've recently released the Plus platform, and the Plus platform is not just a new stack of machine learning models that are producing the underwriting insights along the way. It also has the ability for manual underwriting support. So all of those power tools that we've used internally, we've now exported and externalized that to our users, to the underwriters, and we've built a workbench. We call it the Plus Risk Workbench. Underwriters are using today to research risk manually. So yes, we can tell you whether the bar is the latest open bar on the street, but how many people are visiting that place between 2 a.m. and 4 a.m.? What type of liquor is served there? What other businesses around? Any hospital nearby, any police station nearby? If you want to deep dive into the business, we are supporting that with the workbench. And all of those intermediate insights, all of the intermediate capabilities that we have used internally, we've developed those to be consumed internally, are now externalized to the user. So you can chat with an AI. You can, you know, like ChatGPT, if you've used it, or any other chat interface. We have our own insurance chat bot that you can ask questions. You can see the reasoning. You can see the intermediate insights. You can see, if you say that there are 13 bartenders, we can show you the image that shows those bartenders and the length of the bar. If we're saying that there are sports event on the TV in the background in the bar, you can see these photos that got extracted from. You can see the reviews from the social profiles of people saying we came to watch a game in that place. So all of those capabilities are now at the hands of the underwriters, making them sort of the superheroes with those superpowers that we're providing them. Yeah. And I said it back to the distribution. The last group of people now we're addressing are the agents and brokers, as not only we can help them to select the risk, some of them do risk selection, not all of them, but some of them, we're dramatically shortening any process that they have. So they can research the business before addressing it, and then they can pre-fill the forms automatically with our insights. They can see for all of the carriers they're appointed at, what is the eligibility criteria, and automatically whether the business matches it or not. Whether for one carrier, they require an adjuster to be sent to the business post binding, and they can inform the business owner before that to expect it. All of those capabilities that allow them to work very efficiently, to really know the cost, to make sure there are no underinsureds, no missing risks that are not covered, is something that now we're giving to the agents as well, not just to the underwriters.
Okay. So in that scenario with the bar, thanks for painting that picture, because it's always easy to tell stories. And in that situation, the underwriter may choose not to take on the last bar open at all, or just price it differently. Or maybe it's something that even goes to the E&S side of the house. Some carriers can manage the standard admitted markets as well as non-standard. So it just gives them so much more information. And you're so right about the different nuances of just, you know, we write bars and restaurants. So what kind of bar, you know, they find out later with claims what kind of bar it is, right? You're matching up front. So they're actually in, you mentioned ChatGPT. So a similar kind of interface where they're in the Plank platform, right? Via API, they're able to ask about the risk before they come up with a price or whether they want to write it or not, right?
Correct. So we do have two types of carriers who land at Plank, start using us. The first kind are those that are looking for the data. They came looking for the data in order to automate. They already have some process. They just need the data to make sure they validate the agent submission. They can fill in the missing gaps in information. They have everything needed in order to accurately write the business or renew the business. Many times it's for the renewal and the audit prior to renewals. But the second type are carriers that coming to us with the manual test. They want first to use it manually, to gain trust in data by manually reviewing that. And as our entire platform is fully transparent, we have reasoning for all of the AI models. Every time a model is doing a prediction, you also get the reasoning why that prediction was made. It's very easy to use it manually and to see the insights. It's a very simple task. And after 3 months, 4 months of starting to use the manual workbench and writing workbench, they move to the automation. There's obviously, you don't want just to go over the request for a bindable quote. You want to use data for any request you get, for initial quotes, for filtering the initial submissions. You don't want to create that big gap between the initial quote and the bindable quote. And some of them even don't put underwriters from the bindable quote. They just put underwriters post-bind, which is even worse, as you can just flag something for non-renewal afterwards. So they fall in love with the data either directly by integrating the API and using the data automatically, or by manually using the data in the workbench and then falling in love with the data. The workbench itself has many capabilities in it. We have Copilot that tells you of areas the machine, the AI, think you should look at, right? Let's think about a business that had some incidents where employees got injured. If we detect that and we know that you're writing workers' comp, we will let you know. The Copilot will let you know. It's a very smart AI that can tell you, you should take a look at that area. And then it also helps you to take a look at that area with the chat interface, with the insights and the reasoning for them. Basically, you're not limited with a static data, right? Some snapshot of a company. You can ask anything you want. We've seen brilliant stuff with our users. We've seen an underwriter asking the platform in the chat to write a poem about the business, and they send the poem to the agents, summarizing the risks of the business. You can get very creative with that. So these are not the important stuff, right? But we have seen very, very serious integrations of such a chat when our customers integrated and automated the response to the agents. So if something is not compliant with their eligibility and it's been detected automatically, they're automatically sending an email to the agent explaining what's not compatible with their eligibility criteria and what are the options. And they build it automatically with that Gen AI capability. So we have seen very, very nice usages of our technology throughout our customers.
Yeah. The supplemental questions have tormented agents a long time in the industry. I remember going back to when Accord Forms, paper forms first got started, there was a lot of discussion by carriers and agents about what should be asked on the form, you know, name, address, et cetera, simple things. But then you get into people arguing about, well, we have the supplemental questions we want to ask. And they started arguing about what should be on all these forms, whether it was a homeowner's or a BOP policy or whatever. And agents said, you know, you guys always ask these supplemental questions, but you don't do anything. It doesn't matter. Like, you want us to go dig up all this information, but it doesn't seem to matter ultimately in the price or the coverage availability. So why are you even asking? And it turns out there was an underwriter at a company who wanted to know if anybody in the household, you know, has a mustache. And then so they just kept it, you know, even after the guy retires. they still kept that supplemental question that didn't make any sense. It sounds like AI would really help. Maybe even supplementals is a term that'll go away because it's just a smarter overall process to get at really what the risk is about. Because I can imagine, you know, the bartender or the bar story is just one of many, all kinds of risks.
I have so many stories.
And commercial property alone, goodness, that wow. it would be really fun to take that one apart.
Yeah. So I have a good story, I think, about employment practices liability, EPLI.
Okay. Yeah.
And one of our customers, a top 10 carrier in the US, was asking a question. That when I read that question in the forms, I told them there is no way the entropy of the answers isn't zero, meaning everyone is answering the same thing. The question is, how many employees are you planning to fire in the next 12 months? And I told them there's no way anyone is answering anything but zero. And they looked at the data and all of the submissions had zero in it, right? How dumb would you be? Submitting a form with not answering that question with zero, that you're planning to fire lots of employees in the next year when you're submitting for an EPLI. So it's the questions that our platform is automating. You can divide them into two groups. One, the existing questions, and they can be used to automate the cold form submission, the cold form validation, any supplemental that you have, any internal process that you have. So questions you already are looking for, insights that you already are asking your underwriters or the agents to create, to answer, those can be automated. But the second group of insights are the new additional risk factors, which are things that you might use to replace questions that don't give you any value, that add zero in entropy to your model, and replace them with questions which are highly correlated with the risk. And an example, nowadays we can let you know on a given property, whether some facets of it are vacant, whether you don't have foot traffic, people walking by that facet. And for LRO, right, if you have, let's say, a shopping mall with a whole wall of it and no traffic, all the vandalism, all the graffitis, that breakings and stuff going to happen there. So you do want to know whether you have traffic all around the business or just from one facet of it.
Mm-hmm.
So such additional risk factors that you haven't used till today, suddenly at your fingertips, and you can do a lot with it. But having said that, it's very difficult changing an underwriting model, and it takes time. The best piece that we've had was 2 years of adding a very strong, completely new, completely novel insight into an existing underwriting model. It's not an easy process, but it's worth it. It really drops your loss ratios.
Mm-hmm. So what challenges as a relatively new player in the insurance tech space, what are your challenges, Elad? What are you seeing as you look at the landscape? Is it just simply getting a chance to talk with commercial underwriters, those who lead underwriting teams, or is there some other challenge, competitive challenges? What are you facing?
So, as an entrepreneur, I live by challenges. It breathes challenges. That's my oxygen. And it means that if it's hard for me, it's going to be very hard for others, because we are here to solve challenges, to tackle challenges. Getting to meet leaders in the industry is a challenge, but definitely solvable. You need to know which people to hire, people with connections, people that have worked with the chief underwriting officers of the leading carriers of your target market. So that is solvable. I think that the biggest challenge we've seen till a year ago, and if you'd ask me that question a year ago, I would tell you that this is the leading challenge, was the openness of the buyers to adopt AI to make decisions for them. And that has changed about a year ago when mm-hmm. IBM announced they're going to be paying off. By the way, listen to that example and compared to my previous example of the EPL form, they've announced that they're going to be laying off about 5,000 people, a bit more than that, to be replaced by AI model, by Gen AI. And when IBM can do it, probably you can do it as well. And carriers shifted the mindset that AI can be used to make decisions, not necessarily to replace human beings in the process. You have 100 underwriters in your underwriting team, you're going to keep on having that size of an underwriting team. But they're going to be much more efficient, and B, you're much more efficient. They're going to be sending the quotes much faster with way more accuracy, and you're going to be able to automate with high level of accuracy a lot of stuff. And you've missed quotes before that, and you weren't efficient before that. Now you can be very, very efficient with AI. So adopting AI was a very big challenge. And people were asking me, why should I trust AI for these tests? I don't hear it anymore. For about a year, I don't hear these feedback, these questions, these reactions anymore. So today, the biggest challenge, I think, is the pace of adoption of new technology, not the willingness to adopt it, but the pace of it. The IT departments are still working in a very ordered manner with plans for, you know, the entire next year and maybe even the year following that. Fitting a project into it is challenging for the carriers, and we're here to help them. So we're seeing a very fast adoption of anything that doesn't require an integration. Our manual workbench, right? It's just a web interface. You log into our portal and you're starting to research businesses, as simple as that. And we can even inject the insights through browser extension, like Chrome extension, into your policy admin system. So there is some sort of an integration, but just for the manual underwriting part. If you really want to bake that data into all of the processes that you have today in your policy admin, the integration of that, you need IT for that, and it takes time to do that. So I think this is one of the biggest challenges that I see today. The second biggest one, I think, is with the pace of adoption of the additional risk factors, because it is a regulated industry, which is an advantage as well, not just a disadvantage. It is a regulated industry. You need to go through regulation. You need to make sure that you're not only improving your financial strength, you're not doing any negative data collection, PII, privacy fouls when you're doing that. And it's not an easy process to do. Definitely doable, just not an easy process.
Yeah, I think that's well said. And then my observation has been the pace and the regulation. It's not like, you know, you're coming out with an alternative to Amazon or something. I mean, this is regulated. There's a lot of state-based rules, at least in the U.S., premium tax collections and rating considerations and consumer activists and all kinds of things going on. So, you know, here you are attacking the big problem, which is, but it's good, you know, at least acceptance is there. I think there's a lot of people, this is a gross generalization, but younger generations who are in IT departments are not even IT, on the business side, like in commercial underwriting, who see this and see they're challenging the status quo of a slow-paced change kind of technology department run by baby boomers who just know the way, you know, this is how it works, you know. I've talked to other InsurTech people who say, like, they've said in the past, if we don't get in there by May or June, the next year is done. They're going to have no budget for what we're trying to do. And it's really kind of silly, you know, because that means you just wrote off 18 months of potential improvements in your competitive position as an insurance carrier, you know. So, yeah, well said. Well, let me turn this back to you a lot. The time we have left, I want to ask you where you think, if you could tell our audience, what is your biggest career mistake or blunder, misstep, screw up? Everybody makes mistakes. What did you learn from that experience?
Oh, I've had so many. It's not that I'm proud of them. I know that there is some sort of subset of entrepreneurs that are proud of their mistakes. I am not proud of my mistakes, but I've had a lot. I think some of the biggest ones, at least the ones that taught me the most from, let's see, one was in COVID, when COVID started. So when COVID started, as a startup, and this is a unique situation for a startup, you're still not profitable, still not cash positive at that point. And we've just closed the round. I remember that I've signed the rounds, the fundraising round, right? The fundraising round agreement in isolation. I was near the patient number 40 in Israel. So, you know, everyone knew back then got sick. And I wasn't sick, but I was in isolation. I remember that immediately following the round, we assembled the board and said, guys, something is going on worldwide. It was February, I think, the end of February. And what do we do? And we estimated market's going to fall. Small business is going to fall. Back then, we didn't do any mid-market. We were only doing SMBs in our technology. So these days, our customers, the carriers, we support from micro businesses through SMBs, mid-corp, and all the way to large corporates. But back then, we were just focused on SMBs. And we said, right, SMB is going to collapse. Our customers are going to suffer from that. No new money in the market, no new investments, and we can't meet face-to-face. We believe that selling carriers require meeting face-to-face with the buyers. That's how we work, right? You're selling, you're playing golf with your buyer, you're playing golf with your partner. You're taking them for dinners. You're meeting them in, you know, for a coffee in their office. This is how you sell. And the entire world's going to change. And the entire world changed. But all of the projections that we've had were wrong. The money, we all know that, especially today, the money was super cheap back then. We've raised fund another round at the end of the same year, just because we could, just because money was very, you know, super cheap at that time. And we were able to sell. We actually grew the business significantly by more than 2x that year. And people were willing to work through Zoom. But what we've done, the mistake was that we've changed the business plan in such a way that we kind of lost a year in our go-to-market. We've raised funds at the beginning of the year to build a go-to-market team. Before that, we didn't have a go-to-market team. It was me and, you know, one more executive going in and doing the sales. We've decided to build a go-to-market team, hire sellers, hire SDRs. And we've delayed that for a whole year because we thought you cannot sell. We've delayed extending the customer success department because we thought they will not have business as customers wouldn't onboard. They would collapse and no one collapsed. So we kind of lost a whole year. And I remember January 2021, I'm standing giving the kickoff of the year to the entire employees of Plank. And the first three slides were the things I got wrong in 2020. Let's debrief it together. And it was, I think, one of the biggest mistakes. We kind of, for a startup to lose, quote unquote, a year, we could have run much faster during that year. I think this is a very, very important misstep that we've done. Let's see. Yeah. Another one, I think, was with pricing. We originally, when we've released the platform, we really wanted customers and we told them, this is the fee. And even if you use triple the amount of the volume that you're using today, we wouldn't change the pricing. And we've done it with the first few customers of Plank, and they kept on paying very few dollars, very little, for very big service. And we couldn't show a growth at that point, which is aligned with the actual growth that we've had for volume. We've fixed it. But after that, I'm telling every entrepreneur that I'm working with or mentoring, pay attention to your pricing. The pricing is much more important than what you think. You do want to penetrate the market. Mm-hmm. You do want to have some penetration pricing. But make sure that when you decide that you're there enough, you've set yourself there, and now you need to earn money, make sure that you can do that and not limited by the existing agreements that you've signed.
Yeah, well, that could be a whole podcast in and of itself is value versus price or cost. You know, it's interesting topic for sure. It's like psychology behind it as well. But let me ask you, so you mentioned mentors. Final question, any people you'd like to mention a lot who have helped you along the way, shaped your career?
Obviously, yes. There were many of those. I'm a strong believer in surrounding yourself with consultants and mentors and basically smarter people than you are. I think that the best quality in any executive I'm hiring is that they need to be much smarter than me. I need to feel next to them that they know what they do and to get that impact immediately. So I'm a strong believer in surrounding myself with very, very smart people and getting all of their opinions. There are many along the way that helped me. I think the one that helped me the most was my father. And that's, I don't know whether it's some cliche or not, but when I went to university, I told you that I've studied my BSc during high school. I didn't have a driving license back then, and my father was driving me to and from Tel Aviv. It's about an hour and a half drive to and from the university a few times a week. And I came there with via bus, but I returned with my father, and I was, you know, he was working, managed a company. And listening to him doing business phone calls while driving, speaking, solving problems from HR all the way to professional problems, I think that taught me a lot on how to manage, how to tackle challenges and problems, and that anything can be resolved. There's almost no situation you cannot solve, you cannot deal with. Just a matter of whether of the will, whether you want to tackle that. So if I'm getting this stage now to thank someone, I'm definitely going to thank my father for that.
Okay. Vlad, thank you so much for sharing today. And I wish you all the best with Plank, and look forward to seeing you down the road.
Thank you very much, Peter. It was my pleasure.
This has been On Point with Peter Van Aartrijk, a podcast presentation of Wells Media Group.